Welcome to the Experts in Sport podcast, brought to you by the School of Sport, Exercise and Health Sciences at Loughborough University. Hi Ian, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Hi Martin, thanks for having me.
Obviously we've dragged you out ready for Motivation to Exercise podcast, so thanks for coming on. But for our listeners, can you just give us a brief introduction to yourself?
My name's Ian Taylor. I'm a senior lecturer in psychology at Loughborough University in the School of Sport, Exercise and Health Sciences. And my research area is motivation. Some of that deals with motivation to exercise, motivation for sport, motivation for physical activity, rehab, things like that.
Perfect. So perfect person for this post-Christmas time when lots of people are going to be looking to exercise. So thank you. A very brief intro from me, because I think just to stop me talking too much during this. So many will know I'm a lecturer here at Loughborough, but many probably won't know that I'm also the founder and director of a small group personal training studio called The Fitness Collective. And we're based in West Bridgford in Nottingham, where Ian and I sometimes might go and have coffee. So it's interesting to me and for our members around this motivation to exercise piece. So could you just tell us, we're going to start very broad, what can people do to try to ensure that they are motivated to exercise?
Well, lots of things. It's obviously very difficult to stay motivated, otherwise people would do it all the time. And so New Year's resolutions are a classic. You know, one of the most common is to lose weight through exercise or get fitter or whatever. So it is very difficult. But there are a few things that people can do, which hopefully we'll talk through throughout this podcast. The first probably about their goals and what they set and how they set these goals. There's obviously, most people have heard about SMART goal setting, but it hasn't really progressed from that level of understanding, really. Goal setting first came out in the sort of 1980s, but there's lots of sort of motivation science now that can develop those ideas. One of the which is generally, if you're new to exercise in the new year, then you're probably going to set goals that are too big, that require a lot of support, and therefore once that support disappears, then the goal, you know, the big goal remains and it becomes hard to sustain. So a lot of motivation is to do with goals and goal setting and things like that. And I think one of them is lower the goals. An example is couch to 5K. For someone who hasn't run before, for example, 5K is a massive goal. It's a huge goal. And a lot of the apps and the programs are fantastic in giving you that support to reach that goal. But then that support disappears and you're just left with this big goal. How can you sustain 5K or increase it to 6, 7K and stuff like that? So people, I think you should do very small goals that require little effort. I think effort is also a big thing to talk about in motivation. Just think low effort first. Don't do anything that is particularly hard in the first couple of weeks. Keep it low. If you set a goal, for example, of getting out of the house and going for a walk, that is a good goal to have, rather than I'm going to run 2K today when I've never run in the last 5 years and so forth. So small goals, low effort, I think are a good place to start.
When I was working in personal training Australia, there was a big thing about getting big, hairy, audacious goals. And this was like a massive goal. And it was like, oh, let's go and run a marathon. So, you know, is there a benefit of having a goal out there that's way in the future, as long as you still then rein it into something? Well, okay, where is the how to eat an elephant? Have you heard that book before? So, you know, small steps. So first step to climbing a mountain, those kind of things. So how do you kind of frame that?
It's a good point, actually, in terms of you need to be adaptable in how you use goals, I think. So big dreams, big goals, the dream to eat an elephant, to run a marathon, whatever, are really nice, inspirational, exciting things to do. Okay, so if you think, yeah, I can do that, it's going to be really hard and stuff. So that sort of ticks the sort of excitement box. Okay, but then you've got to think, okay, but on the day-to-day basis, how am I going to motivate myself? And that's a very different way of motivating. So you sort of almost have to park the future, I'm going to run a marathon next year or whatever, and think, okay, right, how am I going to get myself out the house? So let's say we've got this idea that I'm going to run, again, I'll use 5K today, I'm going to run outside 5K, but the weather's miserable and it's rainy, it's windy, etc., etc. You can use sort of breaking down the goals to really sort of minute scale and think, okay, let's set the goal of putting my trainers on or my running shoes on. And once you've done that, then it becomes a lot easier. Okay, my next goal is to just go outside the house. Okay, so I've broken that 5K round down to really small goals. Once you've got out the house and you've got your sort of running shoes on and your kit, it becomes then a lot harder to think, oh no, I'll just go inside and take my shoes back off. You've accomplished two very, very small goals, but they sort of they grease the wheels, if you like. And then once you're outside, you can then go out for a run or whatever, do whatever you want to do, and it makes it so yeah, you're right, and use your goals appropriately. Your big dreams are fantastic and tick the excitement box, and you can tell your mates down your pub and you sound really interesting. But then once your day-to-day goals, especially if you're new, I think today on today's podcast I'll probably be talking about more who are new to exercise. Break the goals down to really, really minute things that take low effort. And if you're struggling to motivate yourself to get out, go for a run or go to the gym or whatever, break it down even smaller. You know, okay, I'll just get in the car. And then once you're in the car going to the gym, you're probably going to end up going to the gym and so forth. So I think adaptability in goal setting is a good thing.
We talk about some of this in the gym, and terminology might be different or changed, but we talk about kind of outcome and process goals.
Yeah.
So, you know, what are you going to achieve and how are you going to do it? And I think many will have heard, you know, a goal without a plan is just a dream. Breaking it down into small steps, small achievable steps. What is it about those small achievable steps that people are more likely to continue with it? Like, how do they feel when they achieve it? What happens?
Yeah, well, it boils down to effort quite a lot of the time. There's a really weird thing where is it a paradox? I'm not sure. I need to look up the definition of paradox. But on the one hand, most health-based goals require a lot of effort. So losing weight, getting fit requires a lot of effort, okay? Now, that's a problem because, motivationally speaking, effort is bad. If all else being equal, people will try to minimise effort wherever possible. So you've got a real standoff in that your goals require effort, but your brain is wired to minimise effort, okay? And what those small goals do is reduce the effort. So it's easier, it's psychologically and physically easier to complete those goals, okay? And so that's essentially what we're talking about here is effort in terms of the goals. It's like, can we reduce the effort so that we can then sort of, we're still going towards our bigger goals that require effort, but our brain is not going, oh, this is too much effort, I'm going to really force you to stay on that sofa type thing. So I think that's what I'm talking about is effort. Minimise effort whenever possible.
I think I'm obviously trying to get free advice here. So within the gym that we set up, you book your session. So you're booked in at a certain time, and the kind of reasoning in our heads behind that was, if you book to go to the hairdressers, you turn up.
Yeah.
And we train on the hour, every hour, and you can book from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. But if you booked in and you don't turn up, well, someone will give you a call, say, why aren't you here? And the effort required just to turn up is what we're trying to get people to do. And then when they get there, all the session is planned for them, so they don't have to think about what they need to do. And back in the day, in a kind of large gym, we'd go in and you'd, you know, Monday you'd go and want to do bench press like every other man, but it wasn't available and there was no room. So when you come into the gym that we have, then everything's planned and you have an area to exercise in. So again, I know many people who walk in the gym and think, I don't know what to do. I'm just going to leave.
Yeah, I think that you touched on a good point in that adaptability. If the bench press machine is not available, what do I do? Just to continue this effort theme, if you can reduce effort at any stage in the exercise process, it's probably a good thing. So having sort of adaptable plans that, oh, okay, right, if, I don't know, if all the treadmills at the gym are, what am I going to do? Or I was going to exercise outside, but it's raining. If you try and plan for your alternatives beforehand, you're then you're moving the effort away from the exercise session. Okay, so it becomes a lot easier. So, you know, a couple of days or having a plan, okay, if it's raining outside, I'll do this instead. Okay, and then so when you get to that idea, it's like you don't really require much mental sort of thought, mental effort. It's like, oh, well, it is raining, so I'll do this. Okay, again, it becomes a lot easier and therefore you're more likely to do it. If you get to the sort of rainy situation and it's like, oh, no, what am I going to do? You're having to use a lot of mental effort then to decide. And like I say, it comes back to this idea of effort is bad, okay, motivationally speaking.
So how then do people change that? How do people then motivate themselves or change what they do? So I know one of the things, the interesting pieces that I read from you, is a lot of people have looked at what motivates behaviour change, whereas you have started trying to frame that as, how does motivation work?
If you look at what motivates behaviour change, in this case exercise, so what motivates exercise, I don't think we're going to come to any firm conclusions, because the what question, for some people, for example, some people might want to exercise on their own and some people might exercise on their group. We're not going to get real systematic ideas. But if we look at how motivation works, we know quite a lot about that. So if you really look at the basic fundamental idea behind motivation, is that if you enjoy, if something's pleasurable, you're more likely to do it. whereas if it's not pleasurable, you're less likely to do it. Okay, so that's how motivation works. So we will, then you can use that. Okay, it's got to be pleasurable. Okay, that's the general principle. And then someone who owns a gym, for example, would say, okay, that's the general principle. We know how motivation works. How can we apply that to the individual? And so, okay, what do you enjoy? What's pleasurable? Is working with someone else pleasurable for you? Okay. If it is, then yes, working with someone else will work for them. It's not the exercising with someone else that's the motivation. It's the enjoyment of it. So I think that's what I'm trying to get at with some of my papers. It's not the what. The what is different for different people. But we know how motivation works quite a lot. Another example is long-term versus short-term benefits. We know that short-term benefits are more motivating than long-term benefits. Okay, so if you're exercising to not get some sort of condition like type 2 diabetes in 30 years' time, that's not a very powerful motivator. Whereas if in the short term you're motivated to go to the gym because you like the gym, you may even fancy the gym instructor or something like that, you know, that's going to motivate you more because you're getting the benefit then of going to the gym compared to some sort of health benefit in a number of years' time. We know how motivation works in that sense, that immediate effects are better than delayed effects. Okay, so you work with your clients or people who are trying to exercise, think, okay, what is the short-term effect that will tick your box? You know, for some, and that's it's a good one in terms of mental health. You know, if you focus on the mood boosting properties of exercise, that is a good short-term benefit of health, rather than wanting to lose 20 kilos, which will take, I don't know, X amount of months and so forth. You can have that long-term goal of I want to lose 20 kilos or 10 kilos or whatever it is. But again, I'd come back to, on a day-to-day basis, that's not going to motivate you. What's going to motivate you more is the short-term benefits. So focus on them, and then the long-term benefits will take care of itself.
It's really interesting because a lot of people will talk about nowadays, there is a lot of kind of group exercise, or you can look at CrossFit, you can look at, you know, all the F45s and Orange Theories, and us to an extent have kind of picked on that group, but as is more small group. But what you're saying is it's not necessarily the group, it's those who enjoy being part of a group that might want to be that, or maybe even that specific group might be a reason to continue exercising. Yeah, would that be a reason?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, in those situations, there's lots of things going on. You're going to get like-minded people joining those people, more or less. You might get some people who get so there's already a group identity there, and so that helps sort of form this bond. So you're likely to enjoy it because there's like-minded people doing similar things to you. You're part of that community. So it's the enjoyment element of doing that is the primary motivating factor. And you're ticking that box by using these group collective-based gyms, I think, is the way I would look at it. And identity is a really important aspect of motivation. It's quite an abstract thing to talk about identity. But if you were to ask yourself how you would label yourself, you know, if someone said, describe yourself in four words, you might be an exerciser, scientist, mother, father, whatever. That's your sense of identity. And that they are really, really powerful motivators of exercise behavior or any other behavior. The way to think about it is, are you being an exerciser or are you simply doing exercise? If you identify with being an exerciser, it's a human tendency to want to demonstrate that identity. Okay, so if you think of yourself as an exerciser, it doesn't take much effort, again. It doesn't take much willpower to demonstrate that identity. So you just do exercise because you are being an exerciser. Whereas someone who's new to exercise, it's not part of their identity. They're simply doing exercise to do exercise or some other goal. They're having to use a lot more sort of fragile, effortful types of motivational processes like willpower. So it's a lot harder for them. So it's almost unfair that exercisers find it really easy to exercise, whereas people who want to be an exerciser but are not, they're just doing exercise for them, it's really hard for them. It almost should be the other way around, but it's not. And so this identity idea, it is a really good basis to, if you think, okay, what type of motivation do I want to possess? Is this identity based? If you can think about being an exerciser, almost like fake it till you make it type thing, but, you know, okay, if I was an exerciser, what would I do? You know, and try and fake being an exerciser, and hopefully over time you do become an exerciser, it becomes part of your identity, and it comes a lot easier to sustain an exercise regime.
It's always been one of the things, so within personal training studios and the kind of place that we own, it's often one of my favourite pieces when a member says to me, I used to hate going to the gym, or I used to hate exercise, and now I really enjoy it. So I think we've got something in our gym that kind of helps facilitate that. But what would you say people need to do if they're going to change from being somebody who doesn't identify as an exerciser? What are the things they need to do to fake it till they make it? What are those choices they need to make?
Becoming an exerciser, starting to identify as an exerciser, should happen as a natural process over time. So simply doing the behaviour, if you do it long enough and sustain it long enough, it should naturally develop. So what you've got to do is focus on the short-term strategies to keep you in the exercise environment. So that could be anything, you know, motivational support from the gym instructors and so forth. But doing little things like a little bit what we've spoken about, keep effort as low as possible. So if you're choosing between a gym that's next door, but you've got a fancier gym 3 miles away that you think you want to go to, choose the gym next door, because it'll be a lot less effort to go there. So reduce effort.
Unless it's my gym. Unless come to mine.
Yeah, unless it's your gym and you know you lay on coaches from 50 miles away. So this first, that one is, think about low effort, okay? So choose activities that don't require changing into ridiculously fancy kit and so forth. Anything to do, reduce effort any way you can. One of the big things is, and this is probably the most controversial, is a bit extreme, but I think new exercisers should do exercise as soon as possible, in the morning if possible. Because new exercisers haven't got the robust, resilient types of motivation like identity, they're probably going to have to rely on quite flaky, fragile types of motivation. And that typically weakens over time, it weakens over the day. If you think about, you know, you might have a stressful day at work, you're tired, etc. These all processes occur over the day. If you can do it as early as possible, you take out those fragile motivational processes. Okay. And we've just got some really exciting data actually that shows this. Apart from the most resilient people, I identify people who think they're exercisers, doing it in the morning leads to more sustained engagement over time. Because in even statistical probability, the longer you leave it in the day, the more likely your pipe's going to burst at home, your child is going to get sent home from school, your friend is going to suggest going out for a drink. So minimising the time between setting the intention, oh, I'm going to exercise today, and actually doing it is a good way to set off on a new exercise regime, I think. And yes, there are sort of nuances to that. If you're a baker that starts work at 3 a.m, you're going to have to bake, but you still can apply the principle as, okay, I need to still do it as soon as possible. You know, and so you need to be a bit creative with your routines to think, okay, how can I do this day? So minimize effort, do it as soon as you can in the day, focus on short-term benefits. I think if you take those three rules, that will help you sustain it long enough to develop an exercise identity. And I think you should, as you're going along, try and actively think, okay, what would an exerciser do? Am I an exerciser? Or think like an exerciser. I think if you can take those short-term strategies, you will become in the exercise environment long enough, and hopefully that identify.
Would you say there's sound advice? Would you say there's an element of enjoyment that could be added to that?
Yeah, again, I go back to, I should have probably added that to the fourth. Don't get sucked in. You know, a lot of people say, I don't like exercise. I don't enjoy exercise. But if you really think about exercise, there's so many different things you can do. I'd be surprised if anyone doesn't like some sort of exercise. I think what they're probably saying is, I didn't like my PE experiences at school, or I got injured when I exercised, and there's something about that. They've applied it to every single variation of exercise. If that's the case, then you just don't think of it as exercise. What type of movement or activity do you enjoy? Yeah, so again, you know, in pleasurable activities, people will do more. Rather than, I don't like exercise, think, okay, what type of activity or movement do I find pleasurable? Whether it's walking around your garden, dancing, gardening, anything you can possibly do. Okay, find what you enjoy, and that's going to be quite a solid foundation. You know, people who just, I see people who go out for runs, and you can just see it on their face that they're having a horrible time. There's very little chance that they're going to sustain those running routine. And it confuses me a little bit about why people do what they don't want to do.
I'm the same when I see that. And obviously January is so difficult for people because a lot of people, I think, see exercise as being, I need to go out for a run.
Yeah.
And I've seen them. You've seen them. And you think, oh, you know, I would not be doing that if I looked like you do when going for a run.
Yeah.
Please go and find something that you want to do. Like, obviously, being a gym owner, one of the things we have in the wall in our office is, remember, this session, this next session should be the best thing that this person does all day.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of a huge goal from us, because we've tried to create a place where people feel welcome. There's huge barriers to walking in the gym. Am I wearing the right clothes? You know, oh, I need to get fit before I start the gym. You know, no, you don't. You need to come to a place where people say hello to you, where actually you're surrounded by other people and you actually enjoy it. That's the kind of message that we try and put out there. And that's not saying everybody needs to go to a gym, because I, strangely, as a gym owner, I don't think everybody needs to go to the gym. I think the gym is part of an ecosystem of exercise that people may want to take part in. You know, we follow NHS guidelines and make sure you're getting resistance training and cardio and a variety of training, and people like different things, so we give as many options as possible. But some people, it might be going and joining a football team again that you used to play for. It might be, like you said, going gardening. It might be going and getting on the river. You know, we're both from Nottingham, getting on the Trent again in January. That might be not so fun, I'm not sure. But how do you think people could go back and find that thing that they enjoy and they want to do?
Yeah, that is a little bit about this sort of educational element. That's a tricky one, in terms of it's almost not about the motivational process. It's just about knowledge of what's out there. Maybe that's the first goal that people should do, is rather than thinking, OK, right, I'm going for a jog, because jog, that's what everyone else does down the River Trent and sees it. So the first goal is, OK, let's try five different activities that I've never tried before and things like that, just to raise awareness of what's out there. And also to broaden those beliefs about what exercise is. Like I say, for some people, gardening will be the best exercise that they've ever, and you know, they love it and stuff, and so forth. So yeah, that is, it's slightly a vague response to your question, but broadening beliefs about what exercise is. And we've got scientific definitions of exercise that are quite narrow, and it's going to be about structured health benefits, etc. I'm not talking about that. That's a very specific definition. I'm talking about a layperson's definition of exercise. You can define exercise as however you want, if that's going to get you healthier. Learning what's out there. Don't just think about exercise in terms of PE experiences or previous experiences. Don't think about it as sport. Don't think about it as competition. Exercise can be much, much more than that. So I think that's the sort of, you know, this raise awareness, raise knowledge, I think, is the key first step.
As a former PE teacher, it always concerns me that, and I know it's true, that many people don't exercise because of their experience in PE. And that saddens me a little, but I think it's true. Is there any types of exercise that are more prevalent in keeping people to exercise? So my example being, you just mentioned about intensity of exercise, and there's been a huge craze over the last 10 or so years in things like CrossFit, which are actually very high intensity, and people love, in many of those contexts, to be, and I was one of them, love to be lying on the floor, absolutely smashed to pieces. Yet what we're saying is actually this kind of huge effort and perseverance in exercise might not be that beneficial. Does that question make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated because you've got all these different motivational effects going on. So all else being thinking, would I take a brand new exerciser and put them in a CrossFit environment and think that they will maintain that? Probably not. There's some really good research actually talking about if you exercise and physical activity is typically pleasurable at certain levels of low intensity. But once you get over physiological thresholds, it becomes fairly displeasurable. Now, you can overcome that if you associate with being an exerciser. You know, that's part of why CrossFit works so well. People identify with that type of exercise. So this brand new exerciser, as an example I'm giving, might go to CrossFit, work at a really high intensity, and might get sucked into the identity. But on the flip side, I would say that probably most won't. And the next time they try and go to CrossFit, they'll just remember how hard and how effortful and how unpleasant it is. Like I say, I'm making broad brushstrokes here, but if I was a gambling man, I wouldn't do a brand new exerciser and take them to a high intensity class of that description. Partly because of these, yeah, like these physiological thresholds. Like I say, in the beginning, focus on low effort.
Are we talking kind of lactate threshold as one of those thresholds?
Yeah, exactly. So lactate threshold, I know physiological expert, but when it starts to get a high intensity. And so what I think we also struggle with is people who haven't exercised, people who are sedentary and might be a bit overweight and living with obesity or whatever, that lactate threshold in an absolute terms, in a normative term, is low. You know, going for a walk will be a high intensity exercise for some people. And embracing that idea, think, okay, we need to keep below that threshold, I think is a good idea for we're talking real novice, you know, never exercised before now. If you've exercised a little bit, and you know what high intensity feels like, and you know that, okay, it might be a little bit uncomfortable during it, but actually it's quite pleasurable when you sort of calm down again. That's different then. Then you can start playing around with different types of intensities, I think. And then if you've got a fairly experienced exerciser who has just maybe stopped for a few months or that, I think, again, you can be more flexible in your intensities of exercise, I think. But for brand new exercisers, all else being equal, do not go above high intensity thresholds. And those intensity thresholds will be lower than you probably think.
It's interesting because I think that the kind of common media that's out there around high intensity exercise is often positive, positive, positive. And we use MyZone, so it's a heart rate monitoring system. So in the gym, people can see their heart rates, and it's red, amber, green. And the red is like 90% heart rate plus.
Yeah.
And we are constantly trying to stop people trying to get in that 90%. There's times and a place for it, don't get me wrong. But many people just think, I need to be in that red zone all the time because that's the expectation. And we're like, no, please don't go that hard, you need to pull yourself back.
Yeah, I wonder actually if, so in athletes there's a more sort of this sort of polarized training routine where certainly for endurance athletes a lot of their training is now in a lot lower intensities that you would think for elite athletes, and it might be useful and hopeful if that filters down into the general population, that if you train three times a week and you're killing yourself three times a week or five times a week or whatever, then your body's probably not going to be adapting as well as it should. And if you rein two out of those three exercise sessions or four out of those, if you rein it down a bit to zone two or whatever parlance you want to use, then you get more benefits. I think if that drips down to the general population, it might be a good thing.
That's really interesting because we tried that in the gym. We tell people things, you know, don't train, don't do a double session. Some people still do, if you're listening. We also, we tried actually once to do a recovery session. So we do yoga and things as well, but we did a recovery session, which was MyZone, heart rate monitor, and it's really what they call the blue zone and a little bit the green zone, which is 70% is green zone, 60% and below is the blue zone. And, I mean, to coin a phrase from our gym manager, said it went down like a fart in a lift.
Yeah.
Like, nobody wanted it. It was probably the worst session ever,
yeah.
And we've never done it since. And it's an interesting one with CrossFit because the premise of CrossFit, the original kind of CrossFit, the idea was great, you know, but led by popular demand, those people who identify as CrossFitters, they want to get smashed almost every session.
Yeah.
And love it. Yeah. And there's a place for it for people who want to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But what we're actually talking about is new exercisers trying to get into exercise, and actually going at that level is, I think what we're saying, is more likely to not be sustainable.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it might be. And I've been the same in the terms of I go to various circuits, high intensity classes, spin classes to give it some beans, you know, absolutely go flat out. And only now am I, oh, right, I should be sort of reining it back and stuff. So it might be the goals that people have. You might have the goal of getting that buzz after a high intensity exercise. If that's the case, then brilliant. And I imagine most people do those classes for that.
For the feeling.
Yeah, for the feeling of it. But an appreciation in new exercises that, okay, that's good, but will it be that motivational in the early stages? Possibly not, if we can rein it back. And will it be optimal for health benefits? Probably not.
I think going back to what you said earlier, so the benefits, health benefits, and again, we try and rein people back and we say, look, you're going to get injured in X amount of time. Might not be today, but it's going to happen. And often it does. So, but those long-term benefits you talked about before, nobody cares.
Yeah.
Because I feel great now, yeah. So I'm not bothered.
Yeah, so it might be that's why your class went down so badly, in that you were focusing on a long-term benefit. This is going to be good in the future. Whereas they just wanted the buzz of 190 beats per minute, sweating over everyone, and the feeling afterwards. And so that, yeah, so it was almost reverse. It was the instructor focusing too far and delayed. Whereas
it was definitely that. It was us trying to rein people back and do that. And hopefully we structure things differently individually and whatever to make them have some high intensity, some low intensity, some strength, some cardio. But the interesting piece, going back to like the media, and you mentioned it'd be nice that, so athletes now have potentially started to rein it in a little bit with that intensity. I did a podcast it must be 18 months ago now, with Tom Evans, so ultra endurance runner. It was with Rich Blagrove, strength training for endurance athletes. And he'd been away, and I'll get it wrong, he'd been away to Kenya or somewhere with some long distance runners. And he said the biggest thing he took away from it was that his intensity was too high.
Yeah.
And these world-leading athletes are training at a much lower intensity than what he'd envisaged, and that's what he took away.
Yeah. It might, to spin it back to motivation, it might be that athletes struggle with that idea. Because I have heard that, you know, a lot of athletes say, oh, it turns out my slow, steady runs were too high intensity. And it might be that they just can't see the benefit of doing that immediately. And so whereas going at a high intensity, you feel like you've trained. And so there is a short-term benefit there, but it's actually counterproductive. So it might be a motivational spin on why athletes and clients of gyms and so forth struggle to rein it at a low but optimal intensity because they can't see the benefit of that. So I think, yeah, that maybe that's a new research area.
There we go. Yeah. Next research coming to you soon. Well, thanks. We've gone off on a tangent that wasn't planned there, but it came up a little bit. I thought, let's touch upon that because I think it's quite interesting. Let's try and recap, and just to say to people out there who just want a short message of how to be motivated for exercise, what are those key things that we've discussed that can try and get them through at least the whole of January to turn them into an exerciser?
Yeah. So I would go focus on enjoyment, reduce effort, and I mean effort in terms of mental effort, physical effort, logistical effort. Focus on short-term benefits, which could be mental health benefits. They don't have to be, but short-term benefits of doing that exercise. Do it as soon as possible in the day. I think if you take those four now strategies I've added, that will hopefully keep you in the exercise habitat, if you like, long enough. And then while you're in there, you will hopefully develop this exerciser type identity. And I think once you've got an exerciser identity, I think you're into the sort of, it becomes very easy then. So I think, yeah, those four strategies for short term with a nod to the long term, trying to build an exercise identity.
I think they are simple, but hopefully very effective. I have this thing that I think exercise and nutrition, which we've not touched upon purposely, are simple, but they're not easy. So by utilising some of those strategies there, we can make them as easy as possible to hopefully avoid all the problems that many people have gone through in the past where motivation then disappears and all of a sudden you're not an exerciser and you've already failed that January New Year's resolution.
Absolutely.
So yeah, what about for you? What's next for you now in terms of your research?
Quite a lot of the stuff we've spoken about is what I'm doing in the research. So we're moving those ideas into the rehab context. So rehabilitation is, you know, if you've done any rehabilitation is boring, monotonous, takes a lot of effort, and most people don't do it. And so how can we, you know, enhance sustainment in the rehabilitation context? So that should be really interesting. We've also got the performance element of our research. You know, we're trying to make athletes sort of dig a little deeper. If you think about sort of really high intensity sport and exercise, that's pretty uncomfortable. And so how can we just extend that a little bit so they can persist longer or go a little harder or go a little faster, that bit longer, I think. What are the motivational dynamics in there? I think those are my two programmes of research. But like I say, the stuff that I'm talking about is how can we implement those in those contexts? So it's really quite exciting.
Yeah, no, both very interesting. And I've got quite a few physio friends and their biggest frustration is always people just don't do what I tell them to do. And they probably need to learn some more of these techniques. I mentioned it to you before this. Many personal trainers will say, oh, well, my clients aren't doing what they said. That's why they're failing. And, you know, in my head, that's a terrible trainer because you need to be working out, well, why are they failing?
Absolutely.
And what can I do to change me to help change them?
Yeah.
Really appreciate your time in coming in, especially just pre-Christmas, ready for everyone in January. So massively appreciate it and I look forward to speaking to you again in the future.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Experts in Sport podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, then please contact me, Martin Foster, at m.foster@alborough.ac.uk. Thanks for listening. See you next time.